Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report with Austin Peterson. Today I have a very special guest. I have Bob Barr. He's a former federal prosecutor and congressman from Georgia's 7th Congressional District. He's also a former presidential candidate who's currently running for Congress in Georgia's 11th District against Barry Loudermilk. Bob, welcome to the show.
Austin, great to be with you. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Bob. So the first thing I'd like to talk about, a little bit of local politics there in Georgia. At the beginning of the month, some of the least restrictive gun laws in the country, basically. You can have a gun in a church, in a bar, anywhere you want to own a gun in Georgia. What did you think about that law? Do you think it's going to lead to more or less crime?
Well, it will not lead to more crime. Every time that responsible citizens have the ability to better protect themselves, that helps demonstrably in communities all across the country when we've had legislation that frees up our Second Amendment rights. Crime goes down, and the bad guys know that they're taking a risk. If they, try to assault somebody, they may very well be armed. Yeah, the only problem, Austin, is it's a shame that we need to even go through these shenanigans and the fights at the state level and federal level to accomplish something that shouldn't require legislation, and that is the inherent God-given right of every person, every citizen in this country, to be able to defend themselves if they wish with a firearm. But because so many of the anti-gun crowd have been successful over the decades in passing restrictive legislation, we have to go through the process of dismantling those restrictions. And at least here in Georgia, we've taken a strong step in that direction.
Yeah, so John Lott recently published a study that showed that concealed carry permits have exploded in the last 5 to 7 years. And with that, he correlated that violent crime using guns has gone down. There was another study that came out that showed that people's perceptions of violent crime are that they're going up. So do you think that the media probably has a lot to do with that? Because every time there's a shooting, it seems like the media just blows it up. But if you look at the statistics, it appears as if violent crime is going down.
I think the media does have an awful lot to do with it, Austin. The media and the entertainment business generally, but particularly the media. The fact of the matter is that statistically, despite the fact that we have had some terrible tragedies with deranged individuals in recent years going off the deep end and murdering individuals, the incidence of violent crime involving firearms is demonstrably less in recent years, due at least in part. I know there are a lot of factors, but due at least in part to the work of the NRA and other Second Amendment rights organizations in working at the state level to increase the number of states that shall issue permits for concealed carry.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City, is issuing surveys to all of the congressional candidates in 2014. Have you gotten that survey from Michael Bloomberg? Because what it's supposed to be doing is gauging people's responses to their beliefs on gun control in order, ostensibly, so that he can target these people. Have you gotten that survey, and what do you think about this tactic?
Well, I don't make you wash your mouth out with soap for talking about Michael Bloomberg without signing the X. I mean, this man is, he's a terrible hypocrite. Somebody who has the ability, for example, when he was mayor of New York City, and currently, certainly would never, ever dream of giving up his armed bodyguards, and he shouldn't. He shouldn't have to do that. But, for somebody to, travel around the country and use his money to try and defeat not only the Constitution, but the will of the people, and at the same time maintaining his ability to have himself protected by individuals carrying concealed weapons is the height of hypocrisy. But, you know, the anti-gun crowd generally, they don't let the fact that the facts are not with them, history is not with them, the laws are no longer with them, stand in the way. And they concoct these surveys like Mayor Bloomberg has, and many of those that don't like John Lott. You mentioned John Lott, who's done some outstanding and very, very objective and solid research on these issues. You know, the liberals just go out and pay for their own studies to reinforce their own beliefs, and that's what Bloomberg has done.
All right, so if you win the congressional seat this fall, you'll be a federal congressman, which means you'll have to deal with not just local issues, but national and international issues. So I'd like to pivot, if I can, to a national issue that's developing on the southern border right now. What are your concerns and solutions to the immigration crisis that's developing on the southern border?
My concerns are many-fold. They range from the health problems presented by tens of thousands of individuals coming across our border and being dispersed by the Clinton administration into communities around the country with no real way of following up on them, no way to guard against their prevalence of communicable diseases, for example, no way to guard against many of these individuals who are teenagers becoming gang members, not only were gang members in Central America and Mexico, but will do so in the States. You know, the Obama administration is sending these teenagers, these teens and young people around the country where they can engage in criminal activities. They can they might infect other people with communicable diseases, and will have no way whatsoever, realistically speaking, of ever getting them back into the system to determine their deportability. In terms of the immediate problem at the border, what baffles me is that our country is allowing Mexico to facilitate this transfer of thousands of citizens through its territory, through its sovereign territory, by virtue, for example, of a formal agreement between Mexico and Guatemala just a couple of weeks ago that essentially says, okay, anybody coming into Mexico from our southern border with Guatemala can do so. We will take no action against them, and we will allow them unhampered passage up to the northern border so they can go into the United States. This is from a country that is very beholden to us in terms of economic aid and trade, where their largest or one of their largest trading partners. They receive military assistance from us. They receive law enforcement assistance from us. And yet we do absolutely nothing to go to Mexico and say, you are the problem here. You are facilitating this. You're engaged in really, Austin, what I term an international conspiracy with Guatemala and these other countries to violate our sovereignty. And we're doing nothing to stop it. We ought to be busing these kids up after providing, if it takes a few days to get them together once they cross into our country, put them in a tent city like Sheriff Joe Arpaio has proposed down on the southern border with Mexico, and then ship them back to Mexico, which is where they came from. I mean, they may have come from, initially from other countries, but Mexico is the real problem here, and that's where we need to focus our attention and use our tremendous power over Mexico, our influence, to get them to stop this. You know, and of course, even as we're doing nothing to stop this invasion through Mexico of tens of thousands of individuals, we're doing nothing to gain the release of a U.S. Marine who has been held for weeks and weeks and weeks in Mexico in deplorable conditions under trumped-up charges.
Okay, so you were the former candidate for the Libertarian Party president on the Libertarian Party ticket. And full disclosure, I actually worked on your campaign. That was an excellent experience, a learning experience for myself. But I wanted to
say it was an excellent experience for us, too. You were great assistance.
I appreciate that. But I wanted to ask you, because libertarians, they tend to be a little bit more relaxed when it comes to border issues. And I'm just thinking of this in philosophical terms. You know, my ancestors came through Ellis Island And the sort of test that they had for immigrants at the time was that, you know, they looked at a disease check. They checked them for infectious diseases, and they asked them a series of questions. If they passed that series of questions, then they were let into the United States. I think everybody looks at that time in the United States as one of the most prosperous and one of the, you know, the greatest times in American history. I mean, some people call it the Progressive Era, which is, you know, possibly negative. But I want to ask you, Congressman, what do you think about the going to an immigration policy that is similar to that? If it was a disease check, you know, maybe a criminal background check, and a series of questions just to make sure that they aren't, you know, planning on committing any acts of terrorism, and then letting people immigrate here peacefully in the United States. I mean, what do you think about that?
The key is doing it in an organized, lawful process, according to a lawful process, where the needs of our communities here in this country, our businesses, for example, are matched up against those wishing to come into this country. You're absolutely correct. We need to have a proper security check, something that wasn't really that necessary back 100 or 120 years ago, but it's very necessary now with the rise of terrorist organizations around the world and the ease with which they can recruit people from all sorts of different countries and cultures and backgrounds and ethnicity. So we do need to have a security check system. We do need to know who these people are. We do need to provide and require a health check for communicable diseases. And we need to modernize our visa and work permitting laws, not so much increasing the number. The numbers are there, already provided for in the law. But what is missing is a way to create flexibility in those visa and work permitting programs so that, again, the people wishing to come into this country lawfully are matched up against the needs of our businesses. Those laws, for example, that relate to or that dictate how people can come in with work visas, education visas, and work permits have not really been modernized or revised or amended for over 30 years, going back to the 1980s. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So we have a lawful visa and work permitting system that was created and was drafted and put in place according to the needs of our businesses back in the 1980s that hasn't really been modernized since then. Mm-hmm. That will alleviate a lot of the problem as well.
Okay, very good answer. So I'd like to talk to you about a Supreme Court decision, the recent Supreme Court case involving Hobby Lobby. Now, one of the main attacks that Democrats are lobbying at Republicans these days is that there's a war on women, and there was a lot of obfuscation and hearsay about what the Supreme Court decision really meant in regards to employers and their mandates on what sort of birth control coverage they were required to pay for their employees. Now, Hobby Lobby already pays for quite a few different types of birth control for their employees. They were just saying that they did not want to provide abortifacient, so the type of birth control that was seen by them as violating their religious precepts. What did you think about the Hobby Lobby decision? Was it a good thing, or was it not? Did it not go far enough?
It was a good decision, but like a number of other Supreme Court decisions recently, the two, for example, that related to firearms, the Heller decision in 2008 and the Chicago McDonald decision in 2010, they were good decisions, but they didn't go far enough in terms of, in those cases, the freedoms that an individual wishing to have a firearm should have. And in the case of the Hobby Lobby case, it didn't go far enough in terms of the freedom to contract that companies ought to have with their employees in terms of offering health insurance to those employees. But of course, this is to a large extent the result of the fact that most of these decisions are 5-4 decisions. We've seen a few unanimous decisions recently. The case involving the unconstitutional recess appointments, if I'm not mistaken, and a couple of privacy decisions. But the Hobby Lobby case, very controversial, certainly. The firearms rights cases from a few years ago, very controversial. So there were 5-4 decisions. So that, I think, accounts for their limited benefit. But I think it was a good decision because it stood for the proposition that the federal government should not be dictating with absolute mandates what type of insurance coverage, down to the specific type of contraception that might need to be provided by an employer to an employee pursuant to a contractual relationship and based on the religious beliefs of a closely held corporation. So it was a good decision, but yeah, you know, it was a fairly narrow one reflecting the 5-4 nature of it.
Okay. Well, I want to switch really quickly to international issues, and then I'd like to bring it back just to close off to discuss your campaign. So I'd like to discuss yesterday the Israeli Defense Forces invaded, issued a ground invasion of Gaza in order to stop Hamas terrorists from launching rockets into the Ashkelon Heights and into the State of Israel. Now, if you were a congressman again this fall, you would be dealing with these kinds of issues. But I'm going to ask you this question from a libertarian standpoint, because although I personally support the State of Israel, Bob, and their right to defend themselves, I don't like the idea that American taxpayer dollars would go to support military action. The reason why is because there are a lot of Americans who perhaps sympathize with the other side. So tax money that would be coming from us to support the State of Israel, or arms, for example, that would go to support the State of Israel to do these actions to defend themselves, people would be supporting that whether or not they agreed with that or not. So I'm just curious, how do you feel about Israel's actions, personally, one, and then two, do you think that American taxpayer dollars should be used to support the State of Israel?
I think on the first question, I think it would be very difficult not to be supportive of what Israel is doing here, where you have a terrorist organization in an adjoining territory, and the geography over there is very different from what we're used to here in the States. We have a huge country, you have large areas. Over there, it's very, very compact. So it's very difficult to, you can't just sort of move a little bit further away from where these rockets are being launched. And there's no denying the fact that the rockets are being launched by Hamas from the Gaza area. So I don't think, I certainly have no problem with Israel taking action to identify those locations and go in and take them out, preferably in the most surgical way possible. With regard to assistance, I think if we start saying, well, we're going to give military assistance to our allies because from time to time, it is in our national security interest to assist other countries, but we're not going to allow them or going to place limitations on how they can then use it for their self-defense, or we're going to stop it if they use it for a purpose we don't like, it would be very difficult to determine that there would be any country where we would have absolute guarantees that they wouldn't use it for some purpose that we might not from time to time like. If we're going to be a global power, which we are, and if we are going to recognize that it is important for us to have allies overseas, if we are going to recognize that it is important for us to have military port facilities in certain countries where we may need them, where we may need to station planes from time to time, engage in bilateral agreements so that we have overflight rights over certain countries to get where we need it to be to protect our interests from time to time, then I think it is important to have military aid. And over in the Middle East, of course, we've been giving very significant military aid, not just to Israel for many years, but to Egypt as well. So we give it to Egypt, and they may use it from time to time for a purpose that, from a policy standpoint, we may disagree with, but that's kind of the nature of international affairs. You can't control everything, and you have to make decisions at some point based on our national security interest and supporting our allies overseas, because it's in our national security interest to do so.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, well, I'd like to move on now to your congressional race. You're running for the 11th congressional district there in Georgia. And you're running against a candidate named Barry Lauterbach. There's been quite a bit of controversy surrounding that candidate, specifically because there were some charges that he attempted to make it appear as if he was an Air Force pilot, which it turns out that he wasn't. He took down some pictures of him wearing a jumpsuit on his website. And then he sort of accused you of stirring up that controversy. And he said, Bob, he said that he accused you of endorsing Attorney General Eric Holder. Is that true?
Oh, what is true is several years ago, I think probably about 5 or 6 years ago, Eric Holder, who I know from my days when I was in the Congress, and we were almost always on opposite sides of issues when he was the Deputy Attorney General in the Clinton administration and I was in the House, despite the fact that I did write a letter in support, like a lot of Republicans did, saying, you know, we disagree on a lot of issues, but I'm happy to write this letter basically from one attorney in support of another attorney for this position. Once Eric Holder started working in behalf of the Obama administration and taking positions that I think are directly contrary to the Constitution, the rule of law, and separation of powers, and enabling this president to violate the Constitution and in some cases violate the actual laws of this country, I called for Eric Holder, and I did this publicly, called for him to step down and resign. I've done that on a number of occasions because I don't think that simply because you might write a letter in support of somebody at one point, that doesn't mean that then when they do things that they disagree with, and in this case, that I think are harmful to our Constitution, I don't feel bound to say, well, I can never call for his resignation simply because, you know, I might've been one of those that wrote a letter years before. So I've called very vocally for Eric Holder to step down. I think he's enabling this president to engage in actions that are very destructive of our constitutional foundations in this country.
Okay, so it's just a few days until your election, Congressman, and you're going to be going up again against Barry Loudermilk. The Loudermilk campaign released a poll that shows that he's quite a bit ahead of you. Now, obviously, his internal polls could be wrong, but I think that the most interesting part of this poll was they said that they had a high unfavorable rating against you. So what are you going to be doing in the last few days to try and explain to the voters of Georgia why you should be Loudermilk?
Really what we've been doing all along, Austin, and that is reminding voters here in the 11th District of Georgia that I did serve them in the Congress previously at a time when we actually got things done to move our conservative agenda forward, to actually balance the budget, which, as you recall, we actually did back in 1997, passed a balanced budget act, got forced President Clinton to sign it, and we actually did have a federal budget that was in balance for about 3.5 years. Unfortunately, when President Bush came in and had a Republican Congress, both houses, the budget went through the roof again. But I was in the Congress at a time when we actually had leadership, we had a strong commitment to fiscal responsibility, and we got things done to rein in the size, the scope, the cost, and the power of the federal government in a number of areas. And I've continued to work those areas since I've been back out in the private sector. But what we've been doing is reaching out to voters, reminding them of the fact that I did serve them very well as part of the team in the late 90s and early 2000s that did shrink the size of government, that I will go back to the Congress with the seniority that I had previously on those committees that I served on previously, and reminding them how important it is to have somebody with that experience and that seniority to, once again, move us away from government that is absolutely runaway in terms of its power and its spending. And that message is resonating with people. Polling now is much tighter. We're a little bit ahead, but the fact of the matter is that we're going to have probably very, very low turnout in the election here, which will affect not only our race, but the statewide Senate race, for example, between Jack Kingston and David Perdue. It's going to be a very low turnout, so we're just reaching out to as many voters as we can, kind of the old-fashioned ways, you remember, just calling, personal visits, mailing, and direct mail.
All right, one last question. This is the curveball for you, Bob. So it's 2016. You're a congressman. Two men approach you to ask for your endorsement for president of the United States. One, Texas Governor Rick Perry. The other, Senator Rand Paul. Whose hand do you shake?
Rand Paul.
All right, Bob. Bob Barr will soon to be a congressman from Georgia next Tuesday. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to check out his candidate website. Where can we find out more, Bob?
Well, certainly go to our website, barcongress.com. Go to our Twitter account, Bob Barr Congress, Facebook, all of that stuff. I mean, you're much more of an expert in this, you know, the internet communication and blogging and so forth. But Bob Barr, Barr Congress, Bob Barr Congress, any of those will get you right to where you need to go to see why you should vote for Bob Barr for Congress.
If you're in Georgia, don't forget, get out and vote on Tuesday. Bob, have a great day.
Thanks, Austin.